Hello, I'm Charles Commons, and this is Speaking of Next Gen Privileged Access, brought to you by One Identity. Over the course of this six-part podcast series, along with a range of experts from the world of cybersecurity, I'm going to be exploring the world of privileged access management and looking ahead to what the future holds. The aim of this podcast series is to get you thinking about PAM and how secure your organization is. More information on the subjects discussed in each episode are available through the show notes of the podcast. On this episode, we're hearing from One Identity's Ian Stimpson about why your security strategy should start with identity. In this first clip, taken from Ian's presentation of the same name, Ian reminds us of the value of our identity.
We've got Google, Facebook, Tesla. They're collecting this mammoth amount of information about us as individuals, our identity. And why is that important? Why do I like this graphic? Because what this is really talking about is the value of data. Now, depending on where you draw reference to, there's an Economist article on this, and also Daily Telegraph last year made a comment that personal data that these organisations hold about us is more valuable than oil. So I think we can all agree that there is an intrinsic value behind all of this data. It was only last week, that Google acquired Fitbit. Why did they acquire it? Well, there's many different reasons, one of which might be, and I don't know their strategy inside out, might be for that data they will hold about the individuals using the Fitbit. Again, it's adding to their data lake. But it's making all of this data valuable. And what is valuable? Business is after for the bad guys, the bad adversaries, the bad actors. They're after anything that's valuable. And all of this data, all of these data mountains, from an organization's perspective, how do you protect all of that?
Protecting all that information is exactly what this podcast series is all about. But Ian has a stark warning for any organisation who believes it won't happen to them.
I took this from IBM's study earlier this year, stated that it takes companies 206 days to first identify a breach and another 73 days to contain it. So that's quite scary, because there's going to be a lot of organisations out there that are kind of in this phase. They might not even be aware they've been breached, and some that are looking to contain it. So it's a challenge. It's a real challenge out there. And if we delve into this into a little bit more detail, who are behind these breaches? Well, again, we're looking at about 34% internal actors. Now, that could be a malicious employee. That could be, you know, someone making a configuration change accidentally, wrong group membership, assigning the wrong permissions. We've then got state-affiliated actors, 23%. And then the organised criminal groups. So these statistics, I got them from the 2019 DBIR, the Verizon Data Breach Investigatory Report. But it has shown that there's an increase on one side around the organised criminal groups. State-affiliated actors stayed about the same. But it's these sort of statistics that are quite, you know, eye-opening to what's going on behind all of this.
As we heard in episode one, bad actors come in all shapes and sizes. Here's Zoltan Bakos.
Just imagine what happens if one of your IT admins gets a bad performance review. He might want to take it out on the company and delete sensitive data or destroy important systems. It's also a false assumption to only look at the IT team, only look at the internal admins. A lot of attacks and a lot of risks are coming from there, but let's not forget about the work student who is moving from department to department. And often, as a bad practice, he just writes new privileges without the old ones being revoked. And he ends up being with way more access than he needs. Or the CEO of the company, who wants to access everything just because he's the CEO of the company, he also poses a big risk. And also, as a close second to these risky users, organizations also often tend to overlook the problem of third parties accessing your IT environment, because you don't have anything in place to vet them, to check them, as you do with your own employees. Yet, at the same time, you need to give them access to your most critical crown jewels to do their work, to perform their service contract. And that's also quite often overlooked.
Again, it all comes back to identity. As Ian now explains, it's also about who has access to what within an organisation.
From organisations that we speak to, they're having too many accounts on these systems. With those too many accounts, there's too many shared accounts there as well. With too many shared accounts, you get in too many accounts where you don't need them. So Bill joins an organisation and his manager goes, well, give Bill the same access rights as Bob. And they just give him the same sort of rights. So you get in accounts where they don't need them. And if Bill's been there a long time, he's got what we kind of call scope creep. He's amassed loads of different privileges and access to systems that he doesn't need access to. Now with that, how do you then monitor the entitlements? But you can't because of all of these different accounts. And then this is going to cause mistakes. So again, when we kind of bring all of this together, it's not giving you the ability to have any compliance or oversight on any of this. So, too many accounts, too many shared accounts, accounts where you don't need them, excesses entitlements. I think you kind of all agree and kind of get the picture here that it really is a nightmare for an organisation. What does this really mean? Well, access where that individual shouldn't have access. It's going to increase the risk of a breach. End user productivity is going to fall, it's going to have issues there, and it's going to increase the complexity of the IT environment. Coming back to that, there's zero or poor accountability. Who did what? Who's got access where? And then obviously we're all concerned with the bottom line because it's going to increase costs. So what we're really talking around here is having a program around identity-centered security, moving away from the account-based systems so we can actually ensure that we're giving the right access to the right people, the right access to the right resources. So when Bob joins an organisation, he's got access to those resources he needs access to at the right time. So if he needs to work at the weekend or out of hours, you open up that window of opportunity to give him access into those resources and remove those rights, remove that access when he no longer needs it to increase your security posture. Importantly, you provide this in the right way. Give them access in the right way. And what's most important about this is the attestation, being able to prove that you've given the rights to that individual, someone has attested to those rights, and you can prove who and when and where. So when we step back and we look at this from the development program, we've got the identity of that user coming on board, and we kind of call them the birthright of that employee. What do they get on day zero? What do they get when they join the organisation? You know, is it their office, their email accounts and certain applications? So that's all great. What happens during their life cycle? So they're going through their life cycle. They're making that request. We give them the empower, the user and the line manager, to look at what access they need access to or what applications they need access to. Look at the entitlement profile and give them the ability to self-administer, self-request, but also for the line manager to allow them to have access, all in a very controlled way, looking at the automation behind all of this. Where required, it will provision their account into these different applications, but then give you the bigger picture at the end, give you the governance to say, are they adhering to the right standards here? If we've got Jane that's joined the organisation, what's she got access to? Is this correct? Is this compliant with our solutions? And as they go through their life cycle, day-to-day administration, they need, you know, they move around the organisation, they join different parts of the organisation, they need access to different systems. How do we control all of that? Well, you need the automation in place and the policies behind this to actually say when someone moves from accounts payable to accounts receivable, they can't be members of both. So with that, we modify the entitlements based on our compliance platform. So we understand what the business requirements are, modify them entitlements, and remove and deprovision where it is deemed necessary. So we can prove all of this and get the full governance behind the background. So when we look at an identity-centered security platform, we've got our accounts. We're moving away from the accounts. We've got our privileged accounts. When you need to gain access to this, you make a request into the system. The system will check the entitlements, check the compliance behind all of this, provide the provisioning into those systems where you'll provision the identity, and then do the attestation, the access certification behind all of this, to prove what's being given is correct and adhering to those standards. And only then is it providing an identity-based lifecycle across both your governance and your privileged accounts across all of these different applications. With that, it then gives access to the different resources in the timely method and the access rights that are required for those. Make it easy for the user with federation and single sign-on to get that access, but strengthen it all with strong authentication. So that's part of an identity program, identity lifecycle, and then deliver the privileged access, the jumbo jet, where it's required, but only for those individuals that need it. Don't give everyone domain admin, don't give everyone root credentials, only give them the rights to do what they need to do.
It might sound obvious and a bit of a no-brainer, but the results of implementing such a strategy, as Ian explains, provides more than just better security of your data.
We've got the right access for the right individual at the right time. Significantly will increase security, because you've not got too many accounts, so you're not giving access permanently, only when it's required. Users are more happy, more productive, the business is more effective, and we've streamlined IT. We're taking away a lot of the manual process. I have a lot of conversations with organisations, and some even this morning, whereby organisations are looking at, well, how do we take the burden, the load off the IT help desk, and bring it back into the business to make it more streamlined, ensuring that mistakes don't occur. When you're creating an identity manually, is it I Stimpson? Is it Ian Dot Stimpson? Is it Stimpson I? It's putting those policies in place, and that was kind of, you know, a basic example. But it's making sure that the policies are there to reflect the business, be that from naming standards to the governance and access to systems. And this leads on to the full compliance and privacy behind all of this. And then we all like to reduce costs, lowering the total cost of ownership behind all of this. So what's needed? What is needed in this as a solution? Well, we talk around what we call the hybrid enterprise, and there's three or four key areas to this, and I'm going to touch on a few of these. But if we talk around the identity governance and administration, the ability for a user to be born, their birthright, their birth entitlements, their applications they need access to, we can then provision them into those different systems, streamline the administration, following organizational policies for all of this. So the full platform for those systems, applications, be it on-premise or in the cloud. But importantly, it's the governance behind all of this. But then just as importantly, when you're doing the governance side, you then need to look at your privileged access management. You need the ability to, you know, securely lock away some credentials, password vault, rotate them, provide them in your DevOps pipeline, having an application to application check out those credentials and securely rotate them so they're not embedded in scripts anymore. And then have the ability to monitor all of this. Look at what that privileged access is. If you've got a contractor coming in, doing some work on some of your systems, checking out the credentials because they're allowed to, because the governance platform says they are able to, you still need to monitor their session. What are they actually carrying out? Having the eyes on what they're actually doing. And it's when you bring the two of those together, the IGA and the PAM platform, it's really around privileged access governance that really ties these two together.
For more from Ian on privileged access management and what practices he recommends, watch the video that we've linked to in the show notes. Next time, I'm finding out how the future of PAM is developing. Join me then.